This morning we're going to keep looking at Hebrews. We've looked at three lessons so far in the book of Hebrews. We've looked at Jesus better than the angels, Jesus better than Moses, and Jesus better than Joshua. There will not be a test, don't worry. By the end, I'm not even going to be able to remember it all. And this week we're going to look at Jesus, a better high priest, as the author keeps going through. Actually, I'm going to keep that up there for a moment. This is a pretty good depiction of the high priest garments. The description of it is given several times in Leviticus and Exodus and Numbers and through all the law. This garment of the high priest with precious stone. You can see the chest plate with various precious stones and the royal colors. The dyes at the time, of course, this fabric would have been quite expensive, quite royal. This idea of the high priest as an important, valuable figure, right? That's what the attire was meant to convey, this value of the position. So what is a priest? What does a priest do? Now, I've got a picture of the temple here. This is artist's depiction of the temple that we go into the temple, the various levels of the temple. And a priest, in the most basic sense, is an ordained minister having the authority to perform certain rites and administer certain sacraments. Now, that's in quotes because you can tell that's sort of a dictionary definition. And this could apply to any number of different faiths, right? So we could think of the Catholic priests who are allowed to do the particular sacraments of the Catholic faith. Or we could think about, of course, as we're talking here, the Jewish priests who were allowed to perform the sacrifices and the various administrations in Leviticus and Numbers that are given to the people. Essentially, a priest is the special religious person. When we think about the holy man, the priest as opposed to the layman, the lay people, who are not the special religious people, the priest is the special religious person who can do religious things and approach God in the ways that common people cannot. That's the very basic idea of a priest. And again, this is not just in Jewish faith. This applies to a variety of different religions and faiths. The idea of the special holy person, right? And in the Israelite religion, there were many priests, that's a typo, but only one was more important than the others. The high priest himself, Numbers 18:7, and you, in parentheses Aaron, he's talking to Aaron here, and you and your sons with you shall guard your priesthood for all that concerns the altar and that is within the veil, and you shall serve. I give your priesthood as a gift, and here's the important part, the idea of the priest separated from the regular person. Any outsider who comes near shall be put to death. Only the priests were allowed to do these specific things. Hebrews 9, 6, and 7, these preparations having thus been made, the priests go regularly into the first section, which is why I had that picture of the temple, right? Because there were various, let's see if I can go back to it. There were various levels of priesthood, right? The different ways that they could go into different sections of the temple, the closer and closer you got into the most special holy part of the temple, each different level had different requirements to get in. And the high priest was the only person who was allowed to go into the special holiest place. These preparations having thus been made, the priests go regularly into the first section, performing ritual duties, but into the second, the most holy place, only the high priest goes, and he but once a year, only one time a year, and not without taking blood. The common person was not allowed to do what the priest did. That is, I think, the most important part of the priesthood, especially in the Levitical priesthood. The regular, ordinary Jew could not do these things. They were not allowed, and if they tried, they were put to death. Either put to death by God striking them dead, or put to death, there were various provisions in the law for being put to death as a sort of a civil matter, a civil justice. So we come then to Hebrews. If the high priest was the most important figure in Jewish religion, which he was, and this is a depiction of the Ark of the Covenant, that the thing that resided in the most holy place. In fact, this was the thing that made the high priest so important. This object, the Ark of the Covenant, because this was where the presence of God was physically on earth. And so only the high priest could come into the presence of this holy object. The sin, of course, needed to be atoned for by sacrifice to God. Only the high priest was allowed in. Therefore, a high priest was necessary to atone for sin. People could not have their sins atoned for without the high priest. He was the intermediary between God and man. The common people needed to be forgiven, God was the one that they needed to get forgiveness from, and only the high priest could act as a go-between between these two parties. And so, of course, the author of Hebrews needs to compare Jesus to this office of high priest. And you can tell by now what the Hebrew author is trying to do. As we go through the book of Hebrews, the writer is comparing Jesus to all these various aspects of the religion of the Jews, the various different parts of the Jewish faith, the angels as messengers of the Jewish people, Moses as the lawgiver of the Jewish people, Joshua as the rest giver, right? The rest giver. I don't know why I don't have my slides up as I do this. Joshua, the rest giver of Israel. And now we come, of course, to Aaron, the high priest of Israel, as the author is comparing Jesus to these various offices in the Jewish faith. Hebrews 5, 1 through 4, the thing that was read for us then. Every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifice for sin. He can deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. The primary function of the high priest is to act on behalf of men, to offer sacrifice for sins in a way that the common person was not allowed, which is why it was so important that there always be a high priest. Now, notice the two most important qualities of the high priest. One, he is able to deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward. Because the priest, of course, did not just do work one day a year, right? The priest was not just doing things with the sacrifices, but the priest was helping the people. The people who needed to know, A, what does God expect of me? B, how do I do what God expects of me? And C, what do I do when I don't do what God expects of me? Those three questions, right? The priests were able to deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward, helping them in their relationship with God. But the second most important quality of this Old Testament high priest, the high priest of the order of Aaron, was they offered sacrifices for their own sins as well, because they weren't perfect, right? We understand that. Aaron had sin, many sins. Of course, his children all had sin. So they had to offer sacrifices for themselves as well. And so we see then the author is going to make three different points, ways that Jesus is a better high priest. And again, note the important function of the high priest, to act as an intermediary between God and men. I think I did men and God the other time. That function still needs to happen today, right? We still need that same office to be filled, that same role, that same job needs to happen. Somebody needs to be taking the things that I need them to take or atoning for the sins that I need to atone for in God's presence. Because as a fallen, sinful person, I cannot enter the presence of God. And even if I were perfect, I don't know how to get to heaven. Here I am on earth. I can't just float up there, right? I can't enter God's presence in the way that the priest entered his presence with the Ark of the Covenant. I need somebody to do that for me because I'm physical in nature. I need somebody to help me in my relationship with God. Number one, the priesthood of Jesus was designated by God and not inherited by Aaron. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God as Aaron was. So also Jesus did not exalt himself to be made high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, "You are my son, today I have begotten you," as he says in another place, "You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." Now why I chose this picture is, I think, the instant when that was made apparent to people. He was baptized, of course, and then came out of the water, and the Spirit descended from heaven like a dove, and they heard a voice saying what? "This is my son, in whom I am well pleased." Called by the Father. His priesthood was designated by God himself. It was not an inherited quality, right? All the priests after Aaron, they were priests by inheritance because they happened to be born into the right family. But this priesthood, the priesthood of Jesus, the priesthood that is in the order of Melchizedek, is chosen by God himself. Something above and beyond just a regular inherited priesthood. Now, the author is going to return to the order of Melchizedek in chapter 7. He, in fact, is going to say that about this order, we have much to say, but it is difficult to explain. And he's going to try to endeavor to explain that in chapter 7. Number two, Jesus is an intermediary because he understands both sides. And that's better than what Aaron was, right? Aaron was a good person. He was a human. But as a human, he was only able to approach God on behalf of men. He didn't understand God. Nobody really, we can't viscerally understand what it means to be God. He only understood one of the parties, man. Because he was a man, he knew what it was to be a man. All the different problems that come from being a human. All the different problems of being fleshly. But Aaron could not empathize with deity. He could not. There's no way he could have. And it's not his fault, right? It just is, it's part of his nature. Jesus, so then, has another advantage in this respect. Hebrews 4:14, since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens. Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. What does that mean? That phrase, who has passed through the heavens. Coming and going, right? Two different ways he passed through the heavens, right? Ephesians 4:7-10. But grace was given to each of us according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, it says, he ascended on high. And he led a host of captives and gave gifts to men. In saying he ascended, what does it mean? But that he also descended to the lower regions of the earth. And then he who descended is also the one who ascended far above all the heavens, that he might fill all things. Jesus was A, God before he became a human. And then B, went back to God after he was done being a human. He has passed through the heavens. He understands what it is to be deity. He gets both sides of the, not dispute, dispute's not a good way of saying that. He can act on behalf of humanity toward God because he understands what it means to be human, but he can also act on behalf of God toward humanity because he understands what it is to be God. He comes at the problem of sin from both directions. Not just approaching it from the mindset of, I'm a human and I have sin, what do I do? But approaching it from the mindset of, these people that I've created have sin, what are we going to do? He can act on behalf of both parties as a true intermediary. Somebody who viscerally understands both sides and somebody who, I might also add, has authority to act for both sides. Therefore, he can be the best sort of intercessor. While Aaron needed to offer sacrifice for himself as well, because he was a flawed human, we've well established, Jesus maintained his perfection while coming to understand the weakness of the flesh. Hebrews 5:7-10. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplication with loud cries and tears. Very human things, aren't they? Crying and tears and agony and anguish. To him who was able to save him from death, who's that? That would be the Father, right? Isn't this the story of Gethsemane? He was hurt because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Two interesting phrases in these verses. He learned obedience, and then he was made perfect. What does that mean? Because I think we would submit that Jesus has always been perfect, right? I think we would submit that from the beginning of, not even the beginning, from before the beginning, right, until the end of time, we could say that the being of Jesus is perfect. He never had any sin. What does that mean that he was made perfect, that he learned obedience? The incarnation of Jesus, and when we use the fancy word incarnation, we're talking about the physical incarnation, right? God becoming man, taking on flesh. That's what the incarnation is. The incarnation of Jesus was a necessary part of him assuming the role of high priest. Before that moment, before his life on earth, he was not a perfect high priest. He was perfect, sinless, but he was not well suited for the role of high priest. Why? Because he was not empathetic of the flesh. He did not understand what it meant to be human until he learned obedience, that idea of learning obedience, while he was deity, full of power and glory and might. Who would he obey? He was not in subjection to anyone. This was part of his being made flesh, taking on the role of a human. He learned what it meant to be human, to learn obedience, to be made perfect, not in the sense that he wasn't perfect already, but to be made perfect for the role of high priest. That now he perfectly can understand what we need because he's been us. He knows what I need. He knows what the relationship that I have with God, what needs to take place for that to happen. He empathizes with my weakness. We keep reading. Actually, we're going to go back, Hebrews 4, 15 and 16. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who is in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence. I like this idea of confidence. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may find receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. These bolded and italicized parts is the so what, right? This is the so what of it. We have a high priest who is better than Aaron because he was designated by God, not inherited. We have a high priest who is better than Aaron because he understands God's side as well as our side. We have a high priest who is better than Aaron because he understands our side in addition to God's side. He understands perfectly what it means to be human. And so what is the point? So what? Let us then with confidence draw near. Not timidly. Not afraid. Not with doubt. And the story that I'm reminded of, and I think the story that the author is trying to evoke, is the story of Esther. Right? Remember the story of Esther, maybe, if we do. That the king, of course, had his throne room. I don't know exactly what that looked like, but he was in his throne room, right? And he had his scepter. And if anybody approached the king, he had a choice to make, right? The king could choose, I didn't summon you here. What are you doing here? Death to you! Or he could extend his scepter and you could kiss the head of the scepter, and that would be a demonstration that he approved of your presence. And of course, Esther, one of the great bold, confident moments of Esther was she needed to approach the king. She needed to approach the king to get help because the Jews were being slaughtered by the hundreds and thousands. And what are we going to do? Mordecai, tell me what to do. You need to approach the king. And so when she does that, that was a risk because the king might have said, I didn't summon you. I don't want you here. Death to you. But she had to approach anyway. That's, I think, what's being evoked here. And what the author is saying is, you don't need to worry about that. When you approach the throne of God, it is not something you need to be afraid of. It is not something that you need to worry about. You can do so with confidence, knowing that He wants you to be there. He wants you to approach Him. He wants you to come to the throne of grace. He desires your presence. He wants to help, right? He wants to give you the mercy and grace to help in your time of need. The sympathetic Savior wants to help you. That is His most fervent desire. He is not stingy with mercy and grace because He knows exactly what it means to suffer. And don't we? Well, we should have this attitude. Maybe we don't sometimes. When we see somebody suffering in a way that we have suffered, don't we desire to give them the help that we know they need? When we see somebody who's going through a struggle that we have experienced ourselves, I think there's a desire there to offer the help that we viscerally understand that they need. Just like Jesus knows what it is to be human, He knows what it is to be tempted, He knows what it is to be weak, and He is not stingy in His help. He is generous. He wants to give it to us if we will approach the throne. We just have to walk in there and get the help we need. We should not be hesitant or stingy in our approach to His throne. So as we conclude, the first question, sometimes people have the idea, I think, that we don't want to bother God or be an inconvenience, right? Now, we have this idea about people, I understand. Sometimes we have this idea, I don't want to ask so-and-so for help because I don't want to bother them. Right? I don't want to be an inconvenience to them. I don't know what they've got planned for the day. I don't know how much time they have to give. So I don't want to ask so-and-so for help because I know it might be an inconvenience and I don't want to be a bother. And I think sometimes we have that attitude toward God, that I have these problems in my life, whatever they are. It could be any number of things. And I don't want to bother God with those problems, so I'm not going to pray about it. I'm just going to deal with it myself. Well, that's a ridiculous attitude. That's a dumb attitude is what it is. Why do we even get that idea at all? That we might inconvenience or bother God? We looked at this last week. Does God have a limited amount of energy? Does He have a limited amount of time? If He can be everywhere at once and do anything with a snap of His fingers, Why would we imagine that we could even inconvenience him at all? Like, is that even a thing that's possible to do? I would submit, no, it's not. But more than that, these verses, the verses that we've just read right now, indicate that it's far from an inconvenience. It is pleasing to God when we ask him for help. When we go to him with our problems and our worries and our concerns, when we earnestly pray and we seek his help, we seek that mercy and grace, not an inconvenience, not a bother. That is something that he enjoys doing, helping his children with their problems. I don't know where we get this idea, and I know it comes from a good heart, the idea that I don't want to bother or inconvenience God, that comes from a heart that is trying to think of the other person. I understand that. And we need to have that attitude perhaps when we're talking about other people. But when it comes to God, we need to remove that mindset that I might inconvenience or bother my Heavenly Father, that I might approach this throne and be rejected, because he will not reject me. This is a dangerous attitude for the Christian. Why? Because this, if we have this attitude, will mean that I try to face struggles alone, that I do not get the help that I need, the mercy and grace to help in time of need, and it's much more likely that I'll fail, right? That I will be overcome by the problems of the world, the problems that I'm facing. This attitude is dangerous if it prevents us from getting the help we need from the throne of grace. Aaron might have been a high priest, but of course there were other priests under him, and we understand that. If you look at the guided devotional this week, it's going to talk about this idea of the priesthood and us as the priesthood. How do we serve as priests under Jesus? Jesus is the high priest, right? But of course we're told that we are a royal priesthood. So who are we acting as intermediaries for? If the idea of the priesthood was somebody who can act as a go-between between God and men, who are we serving as those intermediaries for between God and humanity? How do we serve as priests under Jesus? He's, of course, the high priest, the one who can do the special high priestly things. But if we are the royal priesthood, as Peter in fact calls us, how do we act as that go-between, that intermediary between God and humanity? And I would submit to you that none of us here are special holy people above each other, but there is a sense in which we as Christians are the intermediaries between God and the lost, are we not? We are the ones who have the knowledge that the lost need. We are the ones who understand what it is to have a relationship with the Father, which the lost need to have. We are the ones who serve as God's priests towards the lost, who can, as I think he said, right, deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward, because I know what it is to be separated from God. I know what it is to be in the world and be tempted, and I know what it is to have struggles in my relationship with the Father. So when I see the people who are lost, the people who don't have a relationship with God, I do empathize with that. I can deal gently with those people. And like Jesus, who is not stingy in his offer of help as a priest under God, as a priest part of this royal priesthood of the church, I need to be generous with my offer of help to the lost, don't I? I need to be willing to share the knowledge that I have as a priest of Jehovah. The conclusion, the lesson of high priesthood, is that there is somebody who acts on your behalf. Somebody who is not like Aaron, and it's not me, right? Because, man, you guys are all in dire straits if I'm your go-between, between you and God. It's not me, it's not the elders. There's somebody who acts on your behalf, who wants to help you, who knows what you're going through because he went through it, yet who overcame what you're going through because he was perfect. And if you're struggling with something, if you're in a difficult circumstance, all you need to do is ask to receive the help that you need. He wants to help you. Will you come and ask him for that help?